Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Luke's English Podcast. And it's a beautiful sunny day while I'm recording this. It's very hot, of course. I mean, nothing's perfect. Sometimes you get a beautiful sunny day, but it's also hot. I'm not complaining. Don't get me wrong. I'm not complaining about the weather. It's brilliant. And as an English person, you know, it would be ridiculous of me to complain about the sunny day. So I'm certainly not doing that. I'm very happy. And also, I've got a special guest on the podcast today, and we're going to find out all about him. And I think it's probably a good time now to just begin by saying hello to him. His name is Nikolai Kulikov. He's actually in Germany. He's in Cologne at this moment, but originally he's from Russia. And I know a few things about him. I don't know him very well at this stage, so this is going to be an interesting chance for me to find out about Nikolai, but also for all of the listeners to Luke's English Podcast to find out about him too. And we'll be doing that over the course of this episode. So, Nikolai, hello.
Hello, hello, dear people of the world.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. So you're in Germany at the moment?
Yes, you? Right now I'm in Cologne.
Okay, and is it sunny there as well like it is here?
Yes, it is sunny and quiet. Well, it's always quiet here.
Yeah?
And a bit sunny and greeny and very Germany.
Really? Okay. Right, Nikolai, let me just kind of give a brief introduction to this episode.
Good.
So, like, let's say 2 weeks ago I had no idea that you existed. But then one of my podcast listeners called Anna Kazan posted a video of you performing stand-up in Dublin onto my forum on my website. She said, mm-hmm. Hi, Luke, I'm just sending you a link to the stand-up performance by a Russian comedian called Kolya Kulikov. And this is what he presented in Dublin in Ireland in English. And so apparently Anna's daughter interviewed you last year for a Moscow newspaper, and I looked at the video that she's posted on the page, and I watched it and I laughed out loud. You're very funny. Okay.
Oh, thank you.
It's a very funny performance. And obviously you were doing it in English in front of a crowd of people in a pub in Dublin, and they were all laughing, and I thought, this guy's very funny. He speaks good English. I want to know what his story is. So another listener called Natalia Dalik, also from Russia, sent me your contact details. She's like one of my podcast ninjas who kind of goes out and collects information. She found your website or something and got your details. So I sent you an email, Nikolai, and the rest is history. And now here you are on Luke's English Podcast. Maybe you can just start by telling me where you're from. Are you from Moscow originally?
Yes, I'm from the small town near Moscow. And, I always thought that I'm a Moscovite.
Yeah.
Moscovich, as we say in Russian.
Moscovite in English.
Moscovite, yeah. Yeah. And I went to the Moscow State University. I studied journalism. Mm-hmm.
Journalism, yeah.
Journalism, yes, that's what I started, yeah. I was always fascinated by English language. And because in the early days, in childhood, I watched a lot of American action movies with Steven Seagal, something like that. And so I always wanted to be in one of those movies.
Right.
So I studied all the cool phrases, all the cool lines from American action movies.
Yeah.
Like, shit! That's one of the most favorite lines.
Just shit!
Shit! And in Russian, it usually was translated like, it's not good.
Really? Just that? It's
something
not
like
good.
That. Yeah, you cannot say shit out loud in Russia. Ah. It's still not very, well, not common.
Right.
And now we cannot even curse in movies or in theater or in plays because now cursing is banned. And if you are making a movie or making a theater play with cursing, you will be charged
really
with fine. So every time you make a movie when a character says "fuck you," it's translated like "I don't like you."
Really, but that's a pity, isn't it? Because it's not the same.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's not the same. So that's how I started to learn English.
Right, just right. So is that what you started with? Shit and fuck you. Were those the first two things you learned?
Yes, and I will be back.
Right. So
I'm your father. You know the basics.
Yeah.
The basics.
What about this one? We got company.
That was too advanced. That was too advanced.
How about this
me.
One? Get out of there!
Yes. Fire in the hole!
Right.
That's how I describe my sex life.
She's gonna blow.
Sorry.
Really. She's gonna blow as well. Maybe that maybe. She's gonna blow. Get out of there! I don't know what I don't know what happens in your sex life, Nikolai. But maybe if those are the phrases you're using, sounds like it's doing quite well.
Yeah. But I think we have to stop with this juvenile jokes, because juvenile jokes is my favorite.
Yeah, me too.
Are my favorites. I can how you call it? Innuendo.
Innuendos. Yeah.
Innuendos. Yeah. I just adore that. It's my guilty pleasure. I try to avoid it, but I can't help myself every time when some word can have a double meaning, mm-hmm. and the second meaning is something nasty.
Yeah.
I will use it.
Yeah.
That's how I love English.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. That's a really good way to get into the language, because I mean, I don't know what it's like in Russian, because I'm afraid I don't speak Russian, but English does have so much potential for double meaning.
Because
our vocabulary is very broad, and we have many words that basically mean the same thing. And also we have, like, you know, bits of connected speech and other things that make it sound like there are other words being used, or you can suggest things. It's a very ambiguous language, and that allows you to play with it and suggest things and make innuendos.
That's what I like about English. You know, there are some great lines in English-speaking movies that cannot be translated into Russian. Do you know the movie director Edgar Wright?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
He did Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz
and Worlds and Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah.
And his first movie was a spoof of a Western movie.
Uh-huh.
Shot in some rural English area. I don't remember. Something like, well, I don't know, Gloucestershire or Lincolnshire. You know, you have these words like where you have stir and shire in the end.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
Cakestershire. Or saliva shire.
Yeah, saliva stershire.
Claire.
Yeah.
and it's called County. No, it well, and there are two, you know, hard-boiled cowboys meet.
Yeah.
And they're supposed to be a gun down, and one of them says to another, "Draw," which means put out your pencil.
Right.
And another asks, "I don't have a pencil." And for me, it's so childish and it's so brilliant.
Yeah, because it draws like, you know, what they say in a Sergio Leone movie, draw. You're going to pull them pistols, you're going to whistle Dixie, you know, that kind of thing.
But I don't have a pencil on me.
Yeah.
Are you a comedian? No, I'm a joker. Well, something like that. And I just adore this kind of wordplay. Mm. But this particular line, it's, well, it cannot be translated in Russian and it's pity.
Yeah, yeah, that's that. What would they do? What would the translators do at that point? I mean, they'd just have to miss the joke, wouldn't they?
Yes, yes. And, well, in Russia, we usually dub all the movies. Mm. So we don't hear how, well, not me, because I watch all the movies without translation, but a lot of Russian audience watch movies not actually hearing the voice of Robert De Niro or, you know, or Gary Oldman. Yeah. And I think it's a great pity.
Yeah.
And there are, well, there are a lot of British and Irish movies that if you dub them, you just lose their charm. Mm. For example, the movie Filth.
Yes.
Or In Bruges, or Guard with Gleason, you know. If you... do you know the movie Guard with Gleason?
Well, I don't... I know the film, but I haven't seen it. But I have seen In Bruges, which I believe is by the same director, and it.
No. It's his brother. It's McDonagh. It's McDonagh, but it's his brother.
I see. But it's got the same actor, Brendan Gleeson.
Yeah, Brendan Gleeson. Yeah, he's awesome.
He's an Irish actor, and he's just got that really strong Irish accent. In Bruges, I think, is probably a slightly more famous film because it's it has that big star in it. I can't remember his name now.
Colin Farrell.
Colin Farrell, who's like a big Hollywood actor, but he's originally from Ireland. And this film, In Bruges, just for the listeners, if they don't know the film, it's basically about two hitmen, two assassins, who are both Irish, and they are in Bruges in Belgium, which... as far as they're concerned, is like the most boring town in the world. And they've been sent there to do some job, some, you know, hit job. But they're just basically waiting around in Bruges for ages and ages. And the thing that's so great about it is the script and the accents of the actors. And the way they sort of, you know, speak like this with an Irish accent, oh, fucking hell, it's a fucking boring town, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
All the swearing is a joy to listen to because it's so full of character and so full of colour and nuance and all that kind of thing. So this other film, The Guard, also stars Brendan Gleeson. It's a similar tone, I believe, although I haven't seen the film.
Yes, it has the similar tone and... his first line is, "What a beautiful fucking day."
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
And he's, well, I would love to mock, you know, I would like to make an impression of Irish accent, but it's too beautiful for me. It's too complicated for me that I just, pretend that I can do it.
Well, you can swear like an Irish person. I heard you do it in your stand-up set.
Yeah, I lived in London in, I'm a stand-up comedian and I always adored British stand-up comedy more than American or Australian or New Zealandish.
It's a good point that. Kiwi.
Kiwi.
Kiwi is the adjective for New Zealand.
Really? Yep. You don't say New Zealand-y?
New Zealandish, New Zealand-y, not as far as I'm aware. I'm sure that some people in New Zealand have created a more formal adjective for their country, but as far as I'm concerned, as far as I'm aware, it's just Kiwi. Mm-hmm. That's Kiwi. The simple one, yeah.
That's the name of the bird.
Yeah, that's right. The people from New Zealand are known as Kiwis.
It's like it's the same as to call the Russian people, you know, not Russian, but vodka or beery.
I guess so. But
Wolfie.
Wolfie. It's quite a nice nickname for the Russians. Wolfies.
wolfies.
But yeah, the kiwis, yeah, they're birds and birds that live in New Zealand, sort of flightless birds that are quite common in New Zealand. But yeah, the people are known as kiwis, and so the adjective is also kiwi. So, for example, some kiwi comedians. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's just my solution to that problem of like, what's the adjective for New Zealand? Well, you can just say kiwi. That's fine.
I believe all the listeners right now say to themselves, Oh, thank you, Luke, for this solution.
Yeah, yeah. I certainly hope so, Nikolai.
I always loved British stand-up comedy, so I had a dream of going to, you know, to London and to do stand-up comedy there. So this summer I went to London and I lived there for a month, and I tried to do open mic every night as I could, and I've developed some strong jokes. The joke that I always opened with was about Irish accent. I said, I always this is my first time in England, and I always loved English language, and I always loved Irish accent. I just adore how you say fuck or conch instead of thank you. And that was my opening joke that worked every time. And since you hear the laughter for the first time, you know that you're good.
Yeah.
You know that everything will go smoothly after that. It went pretty good after that. But, it took me like 1 month to develop just this one joke. People in Ireland, they just love this joke.
Yeah.
In Dublin and in County Clare, where I was also.
Yeah. So now I realize that we've been talking for, 15 minutes or something. I don't know if my listeners really know who you are. So I've explained that I saw a video of you doing stand-up comedy. I think it's clear that you come from Russia, you're from Moscow. So, I mean, is that what you do? You're a stand-up comedian then, are you? Is that your job description?
I'm trying to do as much stand-up as I could, but it's not easy in Russia because we don't have this huge, well-developed stand-up scene as they have it in UK or in US. There are no much money in stand-up. The market of stand-up comedy is not, you know, well saturated. My main income and the most time consuming job is screenwriting.
Okay.
I'm a screenwriter, and I might say one of the good ones. In Russia last year, I co-wrote two box office hits in Russia.
Oh, well done.
And thank you. And I even got Russian Oscar for a script.
Seriously?
It's called Golden Eagle.
Yeah.
And it was for the script about famous Russian hockey player Valery Kharlamov. You're not that old, so I think you don't remember, but there was a famous hockey game in 1972. When Soviet Union first time played with Canadian professionals, Valery Kharlamov was one of the stars of that series. This is a biopic, but I think it's a pretty good one. So now I'm in demand as a screenwriter. I write a lot, and I haven't performed in Russia for 2 months, I think.
I see. That's great. Congratulations on winning the award for the screenplay. That's amazing. It's not It's not every day I speak to someone who's won, you know, an award like that. That's great. Well done.
Well, thank you, but it can sound like a big of a deal, but it's easy to get an award in Russia because there are not so many professionals in movie industry in Russia. So if you do something at least well, at least without mistakes, you can get, an achievement instantly.
Right, okay.
Because there isn't a lot of competition like in US or in UK. Well, so it's not big a deal. I'm not that talented. Okay. I'm just pretty lucky to be born in Russia at this stage.
Just in the right place at the right time, were you?
Yes, under Putin's regime.
Okay, you were lucky to be born under Putin's regime. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I'm joking. I don't know. I don't know. I think I will understand this in the end of my life.
Really?
Well, yes. I think Putin's regime has some perks and some terrible sides. But we have a funny podcast, not?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. It's, I mean, it's not just funny at the expense of more serious topics. I like to try and cover everything.
Okay.
I mean, it's impossible to cover everything, but I am interested in hearing your side of the story regarding what's going on in Russia, and let's maybe come on to that in a bit because I still want to find out some other things about
you.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. All right, so you, screenwriter. You also have done stand up in Russia. So is there a stand up comedy scene in Russia?
Well, I may say it's not quite yet.
Okay.
There are, I don't know, 50 comedians, 50 stand-up comedians in Russia, and I think I know all of them.
Right.
Most of them live in Moscow and in St. Petersburg, and some are in, I don't know, Siberia. Mm-hmm. And we don't have proper stand-up comedy clubs like Comedy Store or Comedy Cafe or Comedy Cellar. Yeah. We don't have this industry up to this level.
Right.
But we have already some TV shows that involve stand-up, and I've done two of them.
Yeah.
But you know, this is the interesting thing about Russia. In UK, for example, when you appear with your stand-up on TV, it's one of the highest points of your career.
Yeah.
You have to earn it. You have to fight for it. You have to work hard for it for years. Mm. But in Russia, since there are not so many professionals in this area, you can instantly get your spot on TV.
Nice.
You know, like comedians with, 30 gigs.
Yeah.
And 5 minutes of jokes can have their spot on TV, and after that become, not famous, but, how exposed.
Yeah.
Well exposed. So this is how you gain your experience and fame in Russia. You first you appear on TV with any stupid shit that you have. But after that, you're exposed to a whole country, and after that, they begin to invite you to some, gigs and different concerts and parties. And, let's have this comedian from this TV show.
Yeah.
And you appear at this gig, not being experienced, but being just once exposed on TV.
Right.
So people get to know you through TV and not through your, hard work on a circuit.
Right. Because, in London, it's really quite different. You can't get on TV unless you've done stand-up, possibly for years. I mean, the way it works generally is that you start in the open mic level, working at like crappy little rooms above pubs in front of like, you know, 10 people, half of whom are other comedians. So you just do this for ages and ages, and then you finally break through to another level, which is where you start doing gigs in front of larger audiences, but you might not be paid for it. And then eventually you start getting paid gigs, and if you do well at those paid gigs, then you, and you've got like 10 to 20 minutes of strong material, you might then join some agency which will send you around the country, and you do tours, you go to every room in the country and you do your 10 to 20 minutes, and you do an Edinburgh show for years and years, and you use all your energy and all of your time and goes into it. And then ultimately, after about 5 years of this hard work, you might be given a little spot on a TV show, and then boom, you know, you've made it and you're suddenly famous.
Yes.
You can charge more money, you can do corporate gigs and all that stuff. And so the TV is like the final stage in this very long process. But in Russia, it seems like there's a lot more open spots on TV, and you can kind of get on TV before you do your real work, you know, all your hard work in
yes.
the clubs.
Yes. TV producers need, you know, the human meat to fill in all the spots that they have. So yeah. they constantly have this, you know, contest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like comedy battle.
Right.
Laughter fighting. you know, humor boxing.
Is it always like violent in this way? Is there always like, you know, comedy wrestling?
Yeah, something like that. Yes, it's a bit harsh. It's not violent, but it's a bit harsh. You know,
yeah.
when a newbie, a novice,
yeah.
appear on stage, he's greeted by three or I don't know five judges
right.
who are well established, and they are programmed to be mean to this novice.
Yeah.
Like, who are you? What are you going to do? Some jokes? And if one joke doesn't work, they just throw him out of the stage, literally.
Really? They literally throw him off the stage?
Yes. There is a show called Comedy Battle, and if you're not funny for like 30 seconds, the stage leans forward and you cannot stand there and you fall down. I think it's a kind of you treat an artist like a gladiator,
right?
You know, it's, well, it's a bit pathetic. It's hugely pathetic.
Yeah.
But people and young artists and young comedians, they take this opportunity, you know, to break through to TV, because they think that TV means money, fame, and you know, comfort and security.
But what actually these TV shows are doing is they're just feeding on this sort of desire for young artists to get exposure. They're exploiting them basically, and then humiliating them and making entertainment not out. I mean, like, it works for the TV show, because if the young comedians are funny, then they're funny and that's good. And if they're not funny, then they just get humiliated, and that's like the secondary form of entertainment on these shows. It's not
yes.
fair, really. It's not a great way to develop proper entertainment. It's just like pretty cruel.
Yes.
Really.
Yes, I think it's a bit it's not bit, it's a hugely medieval
yeah.
approach
yes.
to artists. And you know, I think that artist should be cherished for years and he has to be treated with respect and care, and that's how his talent will flourish.
Yeah.
If you are strong enough from the beginning, the TV will suck you in and you instantly will be paid a huge amount of money and you will be instantly, I may say, corrupted
really
by this very secured job and huge money. You will write for sitcoms and some commercials, something like that, because once again, there are not enough professionals in Russian industry. So big industries tend to suck people in with even not high level of professionalism.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, TV needs an army of funny units.
Yes, it does, because it hopefully raises the standards. So do you think the London system, which can be very, very tough for comedians who are starting, I mean, do you think this system is a good one then? Maybe a big question.
I don't know. I've been there for I've been inside of it just for a month.
Yeah.
But you know, I saw a bit of desperation and you know, not high expectations among people. But they all the people that I met were nice,
yeah.
And they had put their heart into this, you know, into this occupation.
Yeah.
So when you treat it just like your hobby or the kind of life you will do anyway, so there is not much of a disappointment in the end, because if you don't aim high, you just get what you want. And that's that was my goal, and the most happy people that I met, they had the same approach to this craft. So, well, I see, as I see, it's pretty fair that if you work a lot, like 10 or 20 years, you will get your TV and you will get huge money, but you have to earn it. But if you don't want to, if you want just to meet nice and witty people and just have a laugh and to drink beer and smoke weed, well, you're good to go. And that was my approach. So I wasn't disappointed, because, well, I already lived my dream, because all my heroes started like this.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, Maybe this system in London, which is kind of like it's much harder to get gigs and things. It's harder to get TV gigs, and it's much harder to sell out. You know, that's what I'm saying. Maybe that encourages a certain kind of authenticity in the stand-up scene. So there's all these performers who are developing material which is not very commercial, you know, and so as a result there's a lot of alternative comedy around, which is a healthy thing, because you know, the best comedy is comedy which is written without some kind of commercial agenda. It's just written because it's genuinely funny or because it's challenging in some way. And so when you kind of separate the commercial world from you know, the artistic world, like you get in London, because not everyone can get on TV, let's face it, it does encourage a certain sort of alternative scene which is more intellectual, more challenging, and so on. So, you know, like there's more variety and more different types of ideas being moved around, and it might be harder to get money from it, but at least it's more liberated in a way.
Yes, but it's it's a sad thing that you cannot get a lot of money out of it, because if you have money, you can fix yourself on this alternative comedy, and you can make it more bright and more interesting and more profound.
Yeah.
But if you're not well paid, you have to work like an accountant or a hitman.
A hitman,
And by the way, there's a lot of experience comes from this kind of occupation. So I recommend it to anyone.
Really?
Because, everyone in Russia worked as a hitman at some point.
Yeah.
So that's how we get our jokes.
I see. Drawing from experience, like, you know, you learn to kill people, and then you learn to kill the audience in a stand-up show.
Yeah. That's kind of fun that I like.
What was I going to say next? I was going to say, all right, so you did comedy in Russia, you got on TV a bit, you did your screenwriting stuff, and then a couple of months ago you decided that you would travel to the UK and to yes. London and do the stand-up scene. We've talked a little bit about how it's difficult, but what made you come to London then to do stand-up?
Well, as I said, all my heroes like Eddie Izzard and Dylan Moran and Kevin Bridges and Stuart Lee, they all were from UK.
Yeah.
Different parts, but still. So
Dylan
wanted
Moran, to be fair, is from Ireland, but maybe it should be part of the UK again. You know,
well, that's my usual, that's my usual mistake, because for me, all the people who don't speak with an American accent, they are from UK,
right,
or from Australia. But good day, you know. So I once said to David O'Doherty, he's an Irish comedian and a brilliant one. I said, "Well, I love you, British," and he said, "I'm actually Irish," and he stopped talking to me. So
yeah, you got to be careful with that. You know,
yes.
Republic of Ireland is like it's no more part of Britain or the UK than Russia is. You know,
yes, it's like Ukraine. To Russia, I think.
I guess it's a similar situation. Yeah.
Yeah.
If Ukraine is to Russia what Ireland is to Britain, then Northern Ireland is Crimea.
Yeah, I think so. Yes.
Although you know, it is different, and I realize that what I'm doing now by talking about this is I'm walking on two levels of thin ice, because I'm potentially talking about the Northern Ireland situation and the Crimea situation at the same time, which is not a recommended position to be in, ladies and gentlemen.
So you can be dead in four different countries.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
in 16 different ways.
I have this maybe flawed point of view as a foreigner, but well, I forgive myself for such mistakes, but the Irish comedy and British comedy from my point of view are pretty well similar, and pretty close. So I went to London because I've never been there, and last year when I was in Edinburgh, I accidentally performed at Stephen K. Amos's gig.
You accidentally performed at Stephen K. Amos's gig? What happened? Did you like go through the wrong door and then, good evening? You know, how did you accidentally perform at Stephen K. Amos's gig?
Well, I always loved Stephen K. Amos, and it was the last day of the festival, and me and my girlfriend, we sat on the first row of his show, and my girlfriend
was wearing.
Yeah, she was wearing. Thank you very much, sir. Teacher. She was wearing a coat because she's... how you say it? Cold-blooded. When you feel cold all the time, a vampire or ghoul,
A ghost, a zombie, undead, a night walker. She's sensitive to the cold.
Yes.
I don't know if she is evil. You must know since she's your girlfriend. But
yeah, she's brilliant. She's listening to us right
is
now.
She really?
And
I'm sorry if I just suggested that you were evil. What's her name?
Her name is Nina.
Nina. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to suggest that you were. Well, to be honest, your boyfriend started it, so I don't know. Why, I don't know why I'm apologizing. He called you a vampire, so I think he should be the one to apologize.
Look, I can assure you, you are forgiven.
Good.
So, we were sitting at the first row, and he came on stage and he said, "Wow, it's hot in here. Why are you in your coat? Get on stage and have a laugh."
Yeah.
And everyone was laughing. And well, he's a brilliant improviser,
yeah.
Stephen Kamos. So he asked her, "Where are you from?" And she said, "I'm from Russia." And he said, "Oh, thank you, comedy god." And it was brilliant. And he asked her, "Are you alone?" She said, "No, I'm with my boyfriend." "What does he do?" "He is a stand-up comedian." And he said, "Are you really? Have you ever performed in English?" I said, "No." And he said, "Do you want to?" I said, "Well, of course." And he said, "Well, I will give you 20 minutes to get, to get prepared. Mm. And after that, I will give you 2 minutes on stage. Is everyone okay with this?"
Wow.
And it was such a great atmosphere in the room at that this moment. Yeah. So everyone just cheered. Yes, like, yeah, good, good.
Yeah.
So in 20 minutes, he indeed invited me on a stage. And I was shaking, you know.
Yeah.
I was wet with sweat.
Mm.
But I did like 2 or 3 minutes of jokes, and it was good. Everyone laughed.
Yeah.
And after that, we talked with him, and he said, "Well, you have to try to do comedy in English in London."
Yeah.
So that's what, how you call it, a heritage or how you, a legacy.
Yeah, legacy.
Yeah, that was his legacy. So I went to London to do stand-up.
Mm.
And I just wanted to live the life of my heroes.
Yeah.
So that was it. So in the day, I was writing it and memorizing it and trying to figure out if I understand some issues correctly.
Yeah.
And in the evening, I just, well, performed and was trying to meet new people and to find out more about this culture and what is appropriate and what is not appropriate.
Yeah. What about your English? Because it requires quite a lot of confidence to go and do stand up in English in front of English people. Didn't you feel nervous about making mistakes or just, you know, saying something wrong? How did you deal with the confidence issue with English?
Well, I'm pretty badass. really, because Eddie Izzard once said that if you're a comedian, you have to do the things that you are scared about or scared of.
Scared of, yes.
So, and I do everything that Eddie Izzard says.
Uh-huh.
So I even began to run, to do the running.
Did you run? Did you run 43 marathons in 51 days?
Not that. I run 100 marathons. No. Of course not. I'm just preparing myself for this.
Yeah.
I had no issues with this fear because, it's not a rocket science, and I've been doing the stand-up in Russia for 7 years to this point. So I already know that if something goes wrong, the adrenaline kicks in and your intuition helps you out and you comes up with some kind of retort that saves you from this embarrassment.
Right.
But the interesting thing that I realized only in London that for 10 years I was the most amount of English speech that I heard was jokes.
Right, I see. You mean when you were in London, almost all the English that you were exposed to was humorous English or jokes?
Yes. But before that, when I started to, you know, to dig stand-up comedy, yeah. when I started to be a screenwriter in Russia,
yeah.
so I began to watch a lot of American and British movies
yes.
in English. So I was trying to crack the secret of good dialogue writing. So I was watching it in the original language to crack up this, you know,
the secret. Yes, to crack the code, as it
was. Yes, to crack the code of badass language,
right.
like, you know, like McDonagh writes or Edgar Wright or Tarantino, you know,
yes.
this. So the most amount of English that I heard was brilliantly written, funny stuff.
Yeah.
And that's how I think my brain started to work in English.
Yes.
So if I think in English, I often come up with some kind of rhythmical, you know, sentences that have a punchline in the end.
Yeah. Very interesting. So, like, the type of English that you consume when you're learning, you know, let's
yes.
say, or just the type of English that you are exposed to or that you consume, programs your brain to kind of produce that kind of English in return.
Yes, definitely.
So we need to carefully choose the sort of English that we listen to. For example, I mean, I've got this old joke which I use a lot in my stand-up, which is about the BBC News and how lots of people learning English use the BBC News as their standard for learning English. But then, obviously, the danger is that they're going to go out into the world speaking like this, and everyone that they talk to, in every situation, they'll be doing it like this. Hello, I'd like to buy some bread, you know. I'm in the bakery and I'm feeling quite hungry. This is a dramatic situation which needs to be dealt with as soon as possible, you know.
Back to you, Mr. Cashier Man.
Yes, exactly. So that proves the point, though, there, that what you listen to is very important, because you should try and expose yourself to the English that you want to produce, ultimately.
Yes, when we were studying English in Moscow State University, we were reading a lot of a newspaper called Moscow Times, which were written by Russian people who were trying to sound like British people.
Okay.
All these sentences were built so grammatically correct that it made me puke, because you know, it was so scholar, you know, so schooly,
so academic, or so scholarly.
Academic, yeah. That's when you read it, you can feel the crust on your eyes. It covers your eyes and then your brain. But when you listen to the good dialogue in such movies like Trainspotting,
yeah.
or you know, something like that was popular in '90s,
With Nail and I. Have you seen that one?
Yes, definitely. But well, they speak a lot more, you know, flamboyantly,
the theatrical kind of.
Yes. Yeah. We want the finest wines known to humanity, and we want them now.
Exactly.
But that's the kind of language, English language, that I adore and that I want to be a part of.
Yeah.
Well, still, it wasn't hard for me to write in English and to talk in English, and even to improvise in English.
Sorry to interrupt. I was just going to say that's really interesting and very important thing to realize, that you've just prioritized. You decided, okay, I don't necessarily all right, you decided it's more valuable for me to be able to just communicate my message. In this case, in this context, it was to just be funny and to make people laugh. That's more valuable to me than to just produce perfect English, which actually is really boring and soul destroying, you know. I don't mean that like perfect grammar is a bad thing. It's not, of course. It's very important, but we should have balance, and we should realize that it's also important to just get the message across and just try and achieve what we want to achieve without being without being sort of crippled by a desperate need to be correct. Because, you know, like, I've met so many students of English in my career who won't even speak because they are afraid of saying something wrong. You know, they're just like, their attitude is, well, I'm not going to start using this language until I've learnt it perfectly, and once I've mastered it in my head, then I will start using it. But that's just an unsustainable position, I think, that you just have to start. Even if you're not perfect, you just have to start and aim to achieve something, and the language will sort of work itself out. You might make mistakes, but, you know, nobody's perfect, I suppose.
Yes, definitely, definitely. That's what I like about language. You know, there is a famous Russian poet, Joseph Brodsky. He's a Nobel Prize, laureate. How you call it? Laureate.
Laureate. Yeah, poet laureate. Yes.
Yes. In literature, and he, one of his most powerful theses was that language is more powerful than a man. So the language controls you, and you don't control the language.
Right.
And the language somehow flows through you.
Yes.
And it forms you. And if you just allow it to develop its way, it will help you out, and it will work its way correctly.
Yeah So, like, we should be the master of the language. We shouldn't let the language dominate us, as it were.
Yes we have to just give ourselves up to the language.
Yeah.
And the language will flourish on our happy corpses.
Okay. Interesting image there. You're suggesting that language is like a flower which will bloom on your remains after you've died.
Yes.
Which is a poetic image. I'm not sure what it really what it represents, but it's very beautiful.
Okay.
It makes me think of music, and I agree with you, and it's a similar thing with music. You could, for example, you know, you get these people who go to music college, they study all the theory of music, and they know all of the musical theories and stuff, and they know how to read music and everything. They totally understand it, like Neo in the Matrix, you know.
Mm-hmm.
like they just see music when they listen to it and all that sort of thing. They can play everything, they're virtuoso. But what they can't do then is just express what's in their heart, you know. Like, they've just sort of developed they're just totally dominated by the theory and the technical aspects of music, that the sort of soulful, expressive part is lost in the mix somewhere, you know.
But yes, but the analogy works well with music, because if you are open to music, it will give you advice how to write it. Because when if you're not a musical person, when you hum something.
Yeah.
Like, you know that this musical phrase, the resolution of it is it has to go down.
Yeah.
And that's why it looks, you know, finished.
Yeah.
And whole. And this is the same with the language.
Right.
Because language will help you to say the correct things if you are open to it. It's the same.
So you mean that's like that, for example, English has a rhythm to it, and if you're open to that rhythm then it kind of helps you to learn how to finish sentences or how to
not only finish, because in music you have this resolution when the final chord or the final note has to sound harmonically appropriate. Because that there is are you familiar with music? So if I say, for example, there is C, A, M, F, and G. Okay. This is a perfect combination for harmonic song.
Right.
A lot of songs are written on this harmony. So yeah. It's C, A, M, Fa, and G.
So C, A minor, F, and G.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. I certainly see F and G because that's like a three chord trick.
Yeah.
Like
a lot of
blues music is based around. It could be C, F, and G.
Yeah. And when you play blues, you know exactly at what point what chord will resolve.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, maybe will resolve this musical phrase.
Sure.
And I think the same is with the language. It somehow dictates you the correct words and the correct grammar forms. I don't have a lot of examples for it, but that's how I feel the language.
Yeah.
And if this is an argument, well, it works for me.
Yeah, it sounds pretty convincing. It's maybe something to do with trust, just sort of putting your trust in the language
It's like linguistic kung fu,
Yeah, yeah.
You have to trust Neo. You have to trust your language.
There is no spoon.
Yes, yes.
Something to do with that.
Spoon, spin, Spain.
Yeah, no spoon. All the other verbs. Spin, spurn, spawn. Even spin, but...
And have spawn.
Okay. I wonder if my listeners are understanding what the hell we're going on about. I know what you're talking about, and you do. I hope everyone else does. Ladies and gentlemen listening to this, if you don't understand this, there is no spoon, just leave a comment. Okay. I don't think anyone's going to leave a comment, but you never know. So I've got some, clever, inquisitive listeners who might go, I wanted to know about the spoon thing. I want to know more details about there is no spoon. What the hell were they talking about? I'm going to leave a comment. If you are thinking that, just go to teacherluke.co.uk and just find the comment section and write, what are you talking about?
Yeah. But if you haven't seen the spoon, if you don't understand the concept of some tool that helps you grab food,
I see.
That's how you well.
Yeah, that's it. That's all you need to do is you need to just watch the Matrix films, and you need to be familiar with the spoon itself as an invention.
Yes. Yes.
And then you're okay. Then you'll understand. I think that probably covers most people who listen to Luke's English podcast. But you never know, You never know. There's all kinds of people listening to this. Everyone. Aliens.
And,
they're all listening.
And I love you all.
Yes. Good. It's important to say that.
Yes.
So there's so many other things I'd like to ask you.
Okay.
Maybe just two other things, all right? One of them is, did you have any kind of culture shock experiences when you were living in the UK? Not necessarily related to comedy, but you could use that as an example if you wanted to. But did you find anything to be like really sort of different or difficult to understand in England?
Yes, the unlimited politeness.
Right.
And the smiley mood and okay, love, bye, love,
yeah.
All this. In Dublin, I saw a very, very working class guy, in ripped jeans and huge muscles.
Mm-hmm.
And he was quarreling with his girlfriend.
Right.
And she left. And he left into the opposite side of the street, but then he returned and he lost her. So she cried. Well, he shouted like, "Love!" which was like sounding like, well, Susan or, you know, baby, something like yeah. that. But if you don't know the premise to this story, all you can see is just the hard-boiled, you know, working class, I don't read books.
Yeah.
I love my television guy who stands in the middle of the streets and just cries out, love! That was beautiful.
Yeah. So that wouldn't happen in Moscow. You wouldn't get like a sort of, you know, tough working class Moscovite man going,
no.
Love! In the street.
Любовь! I don't know. That's impossible. But, well, you know, the Western and European people are extremely polite and smiley and, well, friendly.
Yes.
I was telling this to different people that I met in London, and they said, well, no, it's not actually the case. We can turn into an angry mob in a second. Just say something about Manchester or, you know, Arsenal or something like that.
Yeah.
But I was never a witness to this kind of behavior. So for me, all the, you know, English stuff is all the English people are like characters from Richard Curtis screenplays.
Right. We're all like what's his name? Hugh Grant. Absolutely no problem. I'm just
Oopsie-daisy. Brilliant. Oh, perfect. Yeah.
And that's an English person sort of who's very angry. It's like an English person is very angry because the waiter overcharged them like by £10. No big deal. It's just sort of what you might have overcharged me by just a few pence or so, but no, okay, never mind. I'll just go home. That's fine. You know, thanks. Yeah. Sorry.
Sorry, I can pay for that. This, you know, this in Russia or in Asia, I think you have to always demonstrate that you have the high status in the hierarchy of the community. Mm. But in UK, everyone is like equal. That's what I liked. But, for example, when you go to the pub, you can see like 20 years youngsters drinking with 50 years old, you know, people. Yeah. And they look like, well, the same bunch.
Yeah.
Which is almost impossible in Russia because, you know, the elderly people, they are more high status, they are considered wiser, but, well, it's not always the case. And you have to, you know, gain your right to stand beside, well, high status people.
Yes.
But in UK, everyone is equal. Well, it seems, it looks like
it's not the case, of course, because we've got, you know, large social divisions and, you know, the rich and the poor and so on. But yeah, I know what you mean. On a surface kind of level, or
yes,
maybe even more than a surface level, there is actually quite a lot of equality, and we're quite proud of that, really. Although it's not, I mean, you know, talk to some people and they will argue that there isn't any genuine equality in the UK. But yeah, I know what you mean, that socially, in social situations, there is less hierarchy and actually a lot less formality than people expect.
Yes,
I think people think, they imagine that the UK is a very formal place, you know, good morning, you know, excuse me, all that kind of thing. But in fact, people are a lot more informal than you might expect. Yes.
Yeah, you can say mate or love to just to anyone. But in Russia, you have to, well, earn this right of such familiarity.
Yeah, if you wanted to ask someone the time in the street, like in France, for example, where I live now, you'd have to say, excusez-moi, monsieur, pardon, monsieur. You know, it's like, excuse me, sir, or madam, you know. And in London, it's like, excuse me, mate, you got the time?
Oh, I love this accent.
You ain't got the time, have you, mate? Cheers, nice one.
Cheers, yeah, that's what I like. Cheers. You don't actually cheer at this point.
No,
you just
cheers.
You just mention this reaction, you know, in a multiple quantity.
Yes.
Well, I liked it. That's what you miss in Russia when you leave, you know, Europe and you come and you're back to Russia. Yeah. Yeah. Well, no one smiles. No one says, hello, how are you? Do you want a cupcake with that? No. Even your parents, you know.
Really?
We are very non-smiling nation.
Yeah.
Because if you put your the points of your mouth upright,
mm-hmm.
The devil will steal your soul.
I see, right.
Is that it?
I mean, there must be a reason behind that. I mean, if I went to Moscow and I was walking around with a smile going, this is lovely, isn't it? Oh, it's a lovely place here. Any chance of a cup of tea? Then what are people going to think of me? Are they going to think I'm insane or what?
That you're a foreigner.
Yeah.
And that you've been in Russia for like an hour.
Right. Okay.
Because in 2 hours or in a day, this smile will vanish,
right.
And you will be as grim as we are.
Why? What will happen to me? What's going to happen to me? That's going to wipe the smile off my face.
I don't know. This is the magic of Russian culture.
Really?
You know the. The ghost of Dostoevsky will haunt you,
right.
And say, like, there is a death around.
Wow.
People die and lose their dignity. Don't smile.
I'd be like, oh, I'm definitely not smiling now.
And when you stop smiling, he will not even say thank you.
Right. Yeah, it's like,
don't smile. Okay, I won't. Fuck you. I will with you.
Like you find the ghost of Dostoevsky again. It's like, hey, Dostoevsky, I've been looking for you. Look, I'm not smiling anymore. In fact, I'm really miserable. What have you got to say?
You know? You're fucked.
You're just and slightly that... less fucked than you were before, but you're still fucked.
Yeah. You will be good when you'll be dead, you know? That's kind of festival. That's very festive mood in Russia, by the way.
Really? What, that kind of dark sense of humor? That's joy, is it?
No. Yes, that's Russian joy, yes.
Right, so, you're going to die. Fuck you. That's like the closest you get to...
No. You don't laugh in the end.
Oh, right, right. I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because laughter is a sound of... happiness, and that's not what Putin wants.
I was going to just ask you finally, we mentioned it earlier on, the slightly more serious subject of the political situation in Russia. You make some jokes in your stand-up in English about Russian stereotypes and things like that, and you said to me earlier on that it's now banned to swear in public performances. What's the situation there? I mean, how do you feel about that? You can't swear in public performances. I mean, that's an incredible violation of your right, isn't it? Your human rights.
Yes, but since it somehow corrupts the Russian culture, the government cares about the culture. Well, surprisingly,
right.
So they want to keep us very well fresh, bright, not polluted,
right.
With this curse or any kind of thoughts. So basically, if we don't swear, we don't have the right words to describe their work with.
Right.
But of course, when I perform with a stand-up in clubs, I can swear, and it's not that vigorously or, how you say it, rigorously or thoroughly.
Yeah.
monitored right now, but I think it will eventually. But of course, you cannot say, for example, I've done two TV shows, two stand-up TV shows, and the stuff that is allowed there is more, you know, like vegetarian family, you know, my girlfriend stuff, and there is no satire, there is no, you know, social commentary or critique of Russian ways. It's very, you know, brighty, sunny, smiley, mother-in-law stuff.
It's very safe, very sort of family-friendly kind of stuff.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
I've decided not to participate in this TV stand-up anymore because, well, it becomes boring. Because, well, your country is at war. Your country is in very peculiar, intense situation, I mean, internationally.
Yeah.
And if you don't walk about, and if you don't talk about it, you don't do your job as a comedian, as a trickster, you know, as a jester.
Yeah.
Because you have to address such topics.
Yeah. You have to poke fun at these issues.
Yeah, you have to discuss it because the comedy is kind of is a kind of journalism without a net.
Yeah.
You know, without a column or restrictions, you can talk about anything.
Yeah.
And that's the way of public discussions, public discussion. But if you just focus on, you know, on observational comedy about hot tea and, you know, the weather, it somehow diminishes your brain.
Yes.
And you become...
well, a kind of zombie, but not like not, but not in a good way.
Yeah, imagine Michael McIntyre, but as a zombie.
Yeah, well, he wouldn't be. I would actually quite like to see that, Nicola. I mean, not because I don't like Michael McIntyre. I do like him. You know,
yeah, he's not. Me too.
I wouldn't watch him all the time, but I do enjoy his stuff. But I think it would just be an interesting sort of remix of Michael McIntyre. You know, sort of doing his stuff about using the London Underground, but as a zombie.
Yeah.
I mean, he's very physical. He jumps around the stage a lot. I'd be quite interested to see how he would deal with not having functional legs, you know? How he probably
but jumping zombie, it can be, well, real fun. With every jump, he loses some limb.
Yeah.
Well, it can be fun. But what I was trying to say, this TV and, you know, this oppression and this, how you say it?
Censorship.
Censorship, yes. Well, it cuts off some of your comedy abilities.
Yeah.
So if you don't want to become a piece of brainless shit, you have to... you have to develop the area for yourself when you are totally free.
Yeah.
You know, like in Matrix when they have this, you know, parties, deep, deeply underground.
Yeah.
That's what I want to do right now. And by the way, my experience with English language, with jokes in English language, taught me to write more economically, you know, more, because the English sentence is statistically far shorter than Russian one.
Really?
Because, yes, of course, we have very long words. For example, you have the word put or take or get, and these short words can have, well, thousands of meanings.
Yeah.
Being combined with some adjectives or words like to, out, at, something
phrasal
like that.
Phrasal verbs.
Yes, but in Russia we have like long, endless words like «над желтизной правительственных зданий». That's just three words, you know?
Yeah.
In English word, in English sentence with this... you know, length.
Yeah,
you can tell a story of David Copperfield.
Yeah.
but Oliver Twist. But yeah. In Russia, it's just, it means here.
Right.
Well, no.
Well, yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yes, but so I want to, right now, when I have a chance out of my screenwriting, work, I want to write in English more economically. I want to write in Russian more economically, more, how you say it, more effectively.
Efficiently,
yes. Mm. But let's talk in a year and yeah. I will tell you how it went.
Okay.
Maybe it will be your first podcast from the prison.
I hope not. I seriously hope not. I mean, genuinely, I really hope not. Well, listen, it's been really great to talk to you, and it's great to hear from, someone. It's great to hear from a Russian person. It's the first time I've had, I believe it's the first time I've had a Russian person on the podcast. I've had some Russian voices on here before, but this is probably the most sort of in-depth conversation I've had with someone from Russia. So that's great.
Thank you for having me. I had a lot of fun with this thousand of listeners.
Yeah, well, it's been a pleasure, and I was glad to speak to you. Do you have anything to say to the people of the world just at the end of this episode?
Yes, if anyone can sell me a citizenship in your country, please contact me immediately.
Okay, so if you want to somehow sell, citizenship to your country, I mean, are there any? Well, you might get offers. You genuinely might get some offers for that. So if you want to, you can just leave a comment below this episode, teacherluke.co.uk. Find this episode and just leave a comment with your offers of citizenship in whichever country you live in.
And the price. I hope it's not more than $50, because that's all I have in Russia.
It's hard being a stand-up comedian in London. There's not a lot of money going around. As I said, it's been an absolute pleasure. I'd like to just present to you now with a certificate, just to prove that you attended an episode of Luke's English Podcast.
it's like a radio certificate that you will provide wirelessly.
Exactly. Yeah, it's just an imaginary certificate which I'm going to present to you now. Here you are.
Don't
get too excited.
It's huge.
It is huge, but it's pretty much valueless. It's not stamped by any authority, by any official governing body of or institution.
I've heard it's a pussy magnet. So
it is. Yeah, it will get you girls. Just display that maybe in the back window of your car. And you will be beating off girls with a stick.
It's what we do in Russia on Sunday.
Is it really? Okay. Well, Nikolai, thank you again for joining me. And, just best of luck with whatever you do. Stay in touch, all right?
Okay, cool. Thank you very much. And thank you, listeners of the world.
Okay. So that was my conversation with Nikolai Kulikov. That was the first time I'd ever spoken to him. And I think that we got on pretty well. I like Nikolai. And I think that we kind of we hit it off. We had a lot of things in common. Obviously the comedy stuff, but also our appreciation of films and just our general sense of humor. I think that we were on the same wavelength. So I'm a fan of Nikolai. And I hope that came through in the conversation. I think that he's a very funny guy indeed. Now, at this point, I would like to suggest that you visit teacherluke.co.uk. I always suggest that. But if you do go to, I think it's probably going to be episode 201. teacherluke.co.uk, find episode 201, go to that page, you'll find some details for Nikolai Kulikov, but also you'll find one of his videos. So you can see a video of him performing stand-up, and I highly recommend that you have a look at the video because it's very interesting and it's very funny. Okay, let me tell you a little bit about the video. It was filmed in a pub in Ireland, in Dublin at a comedy show in a pub, and you see that the room is like full, it's packed full of people all having a drink and a laugh and stuff, and Nikolai comes up onto the stage and he absolutely smashes it. He has a really good gig, he's really funny, the audience absolutely loves him, and they're all laughing out loud, and it's great. It's a really good video because you get a good idea of what it's like at one of these comedy shows in a pub. And so do check it out. You can also obviously see his comedy routine. It's all in English, and it's very good fun. Okay, so I suggest you visit teacherluke.co.uk, find episode 201, and watch his video. You'll enjoy it. Okay, right. So that's the end of this episode of Luke's English Podcast. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget to take part in my competition, which I launched in the previous episode. All right, I've already had a few entries. It's been launched for a few days. I've already had a few entries already. If you're wondering whether you should enter or not, let me just give you a little nudge and say you should definitely enter the competition. It's going to be fun. Check out episode 200 for more information about that. But for now, for this episode, I'd like to wish you all a very friendly and warm goodbye. So I'm going to do that now. And here it is. All right. Goodbye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
Thanks again for listening to Luke's English Podcast. Don't forget to leave your comments in response to this episode at teacherluke.co.uk.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.